New Energy von Hamburg. Der Podcast über Projekte, Menschen, Meinungen zur Energiewende. Vom Cluster Erneuerbare Energien Hamburg.
Welcome everyone to our podcast New Energy from Hamburg. We have a little premiere today because it's our first international issue of our podcast. We are welcoming Nigel Holmes from Scotland. He's based in Edinburgh and he is chief executive of the Scottish Hydrogen and Fuel Cell Association. He's been working there for a little more than 10 years. His educational background is chemistry and he actually holds a PhD in surface science. He was involved or is involved in the COP26 conference going on in Glasgow right now, and that's why we are talking today. Welcome to you, Nigel. Are you fine?
Good afternoon, Astrid. And yes, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned COP26. I was actually through there yesterday for the opening day, and there was big queues of people going into the display areas and starting to talk to each other. So great to see the level of international interest and international activity that's happening with COP26.
Yeah,
but I guess
great.
The key question that everybody is now asking is, will all of this talk translate into action?
Yeah, that's what we're all talking about. What is your wish concerning COP26, maybe as a result from the conference? What are you hoping for, like personally?
Well, I think everybody who's watching COP26, it's almost like holding your breath, thinking, you know, it's clear that we're at a point where we cannot carry on with the use of fossil fuels in the way that we've been using them so far. We have to make a rapid change away from fossil fuels. And the use of hydrogen is going to be a key part of making that transition towards net zero. But we also need more renewables. We need energy efficiency. Carbon capture and storage could play a part as well. It's a very serious situation, and we need to use all of the tools in the box to actually help to avert the risk of going past a tipping point where the climate then starts to just go very, very badly wrong. And like everybody, I'm hoping that what we will see from the negotiations in COP26 is a recognition that we need to make this commitment to decarbonizing the energy system quickly, and that we start to see the action that we need to happen, not in 20 years' time, not in 30 years' time, but we need to start see it happening now. We need to keep a focus on not just net zero targets, but some of the targets such as 2030. We are still seeing the carbon emissions going up. So this year's emissions are going to be the highest ever on record. It's still going in the wrong direction. It's got to turn around very quickly. It's got to start coming down. And we need to make sure that we get to net zero as quickly as possible.
I already told everyone that you're working for the Scottish Hydrogen and Fuel Cell Association, but I think not everybody here in Hamburg knows what this association is doing. So what is your position? What is the goal of the association? And what is going on with hydrogen in Scotland? Maybe you tell us a little bit about that.
Starting with the Scottish Hydrogen and Fuel Cell Association, as they say, it does what it says on the tin. We support the development of hydrogen and fuel cell technologies, and our focus is very much on what are the activities we can start to bring forward in Scotland to actually bring new low emission technologies, low emission both in terms of low carbon, but also for many cities, importantly, low emission in terms of air quality, delivering air quality improvements. So we've got about 160 members, and many of the members are based in Scotland, but not all of them. Our members include universities. We have the city authorities, you know, Aberdeen being a great example of a city that's been active in hydrogen fuel cells for many years. We have industry members as well, small companies, large companies, corporates, and some of the companies are actually not in Scotland. They are based either in the UK or in Europe or more widely. And the reason for that is that there's a lot happening in Scotland, particularly with renewable energy and decarbonisation of the energy system. And a lot of these companies see the opportunities to be closely involved with the activities that are happening in Scotland.
Well, that sounds great. So you already mentioned COP26. So after this long break due to the corona pandemic, everybody was really excited that this conference is going to take place. So maybe you can give us a little bit of an insight. What was it like to prepare this great conference, and what are the obstacles or maybe also the funny moments preparing a big event like that?
So I'm not sure if there's been too many funny moments quite yet, but I'm sure that will happen before the fortnight is finished, Astrid. So the preparations have been ongoing for well over a year. Well, going back probably 18 months or so. It was meant to be held last year, then it was postponed. And the preparations, it's very much about trying to see what is possible within the space available in Glasgow. So the actual COP location in Glasgow is just outside the city centre. It's on the banks of the River Clyde that runs through Glasgow. And you may have seen some pictures on TV already, some large domed buildings. One of them is the Hydro, the other is called the Armadillo as part of the Scottish Events Campus. And those are the two main buildings where the negotiations and many of the broadcasts are taking place from COP. And also in that location, there's all of the national pavilions. So I was looking around yesterday and there's pavilions from America, Australia, Europe, European countries, European Commission. So the whole spectrum of different countries from around the world coming together at COP26, mainly to take part in the negotiations, but also, and I think this is the key part for many people, is to start to share experience in terms of what they're doing and maybe ideas for about what could happen next.
So these national pavilions, what can you see there? Is this something about the research in the field of climate change, or what is it like?
It was a mixture, and some of the pavilions, they have areas where you can sit down and you can listen to people talking and watch some of the broadcasts. There's some interactive displays where you can see pre-recorded messages or pre-recorded clips. I think from my personal perspective, it was slightly frustrating in that it wasn't quite as easy to go and talk to people face to face as it is normally. So everybody's masked up clearly for safety reasons. So it's not quite so straightforward just to have the informal discussions that would have been possible much easier previously. But I guess maybe this is one of the first large events I've been to since COVID started about 18 months ago. So I'm probably just out of practice with going in and talking to people and also trying to get used to the way of doing this in a COVID-safe manner. I'm sure others will find it probably much, much easier. But I think also that the key thing here is, as well as what's happening in the halls, I think there's much more opportunity for people to follow the activities online. So although COVID in some ways has been a barrier to some of the communications, in other ways, it's actually opened it up massively. And for example, the discussion we're having today, yes, there would have been podcasts before we had COVID, but I think there's much more awareness of now how we can start to make better use of digital communications in a way that starts to bring people together from different locations. And we can see what we have actually in common as challenges and how we might be able to work on these together to make real progress.
Yeah, that's true. We also changed a little bit during the corona pandemic, more in a digital way, of course. We're a network and we had to rely on these digital tools because otherwise we would have disappeared, I think. You're definitely right. So you mentioned that it's a really big conference. Maybe you can give us some organizational insight, how you prepare an event like this.
So the organization of the event is very much at a national government level. So associations, for example, can play a supporting role. We can help to bring together some of the ideas that then get taken forward by national governments. Within the UK, the UK government takes the lead on the UK activities. Scotland, a bit like Hamburg and a bit like other regions in Germany, is just one of the regions that is taking part as part of the national activities. But that's not to say that we don't have a key part to play. So it's a bit like talking about hydrogen. People talk about green hydrogen and blue hydrogen. At COP, there's a green zone and a blue zone. And the blue zone is the United Nations controlled area of COP.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? I mean, is that separated or how can you imagine that, blue and green zone?
So actually, the blue zone becomes, you know, totally controlled by the UN. So they have their own security. Mm-hmm. There's a fence. You've got to show all of your ID and passport to get through the fence and to get into the COP blue zone. You've got to pre-register to get in. And inside that blue zone are all of the negotiations and the national pavilions and the high-level discussions taking place. And just on the other side of the river, so the blue zone is on the north side of the river in Glasgow. The green zone on the south side of the river is the United Kingdom's area, where they've got various displays and activities going on. So the green zone is actually much easier to get into. You have to get a ticket, but it's not quite as difficult to get in as the blue zone. And then, as well as the blue and the green, there's also a whole load of other activities taking place in Glasgow. So I was at one of these events yesterday afternoon, which was organised by the, you know, Scottish Enterprise, the regional development agency for Scotland. And, you know, these events are taking place, and many of these are also hybrid events. So as well as having people in the room, there's also the ability for people to join online. So worth keeping an eye on all of the different events that are taking place in the blue, the green, and anywhere else in Glasgow, because many of these are available for people to join online.
All right. Well, that's nice for every one of us, because not everyone can travel to Glasgow. So that's a big opportunity. And you already mentioned in your answer hydrogen. So that's the next topic, actually, because in media, the question came up if hydrogen could play a role at COP26. What do you expect? Do you think hydrogen needs to take a center stage at COP26? Or what could be the contribution of hydrogen towards the Paris Agreement and the climate goals?
What we've seen over the past couple of years, Astrid, has been the hydrogen being recognised as being a key part of achieving net zero. And the reason is that there's many areas where electrification can make a big difference. It can actually start to displace, you know, fossil fuels. But there are also some areas which are actually very challenging for electrification. These are what people often call the hard-to-treat areas. It could be heavy industry. It could be large trucks driving along motorways for long distances. It could be shipping emissions. It could be aviation emissions. And all of these are areas where hydrogen can be one of the ways of actually tackling or displacing the use of fossil fuels. The reason is that hydrogen as a chemical store of energy can actually contain more energy in a certain amount of space and weight than you can often do with a battery. So there's often going to be a mixture of different approaches. So batteries and electrification are going to be key to decarbonisation, but hydrogen can actually complement batteries and electrification and actually take us from being part of the way there to pretty much all of the way there. So this is increasingly the way people see hydrogen as being part of the answer. But also, and I mentioned earlier, you know, the terms green hydrogen and blue hydrogen, this is really just a reflection of, you know, hydrogen doesn't readily exist in nature. You know, you don't have hydrogen mines that you can go to and get hydrogen from. You need to start with another form of energy. And it might be traditionally it's been fossil fuels have been used for producing hydrogen. But increasingly, it's actually using renewable energy for producing hydrogen that is coming through as being the goal in terms of long-term sustainable production of hydrogen, decarbonizing the economy.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that a lot of countries already unveiled hydrogen roadmaps. I mean, Germany did that, but also other countries like Japan, South Korea. Also, China is doing something in the field of hydrogen. Do you think that there will be some methodologies or standards being established during the COP26, or that there could be some inspiration for this?
I think each nation will have its own specific requirements. We just have to look at the way electricity is generated in different countries to see that the balance between, you know, fossil or renewables or nuclear can be very, very different in different countries. And I think in the same way, the application of hydrogen in different countries could also reflect on the local geography, the actual availability of resources, and in particular, the availability of renewable resources. And in that respect, yes, Scotland is very fortunate in that around Scotland, there is a lot of wind, there's a lot of wave, there's a lot of tidal. I think, yes, Scotland's got about 25% of Europe's wind resource. Fantastic, you know, sort of gift. And going forward, you know, this is how the hydrogen strategy for locations like, you know, Scotland, but also Chile and other countries, is looking at where we have strong levels of renewable resource. How can that resource be captured and actually then transported as energy to other locations? And again, this is where hydrogen becomes very attractive. So rather than thinking about trying to move energy by very, very long electrical connections, which would maybe possible, but it would be very expensive, how we can use hydrogen or some of the derivatives of hydrogen, for example, ammonia or methanol or other what people call synfuels or e-fuels, could be produced local to where we have the surplus renewables and then moved to areas where there is the demand for that energy. So it's using the ability to capture energy, store energy, and move energy that hydrogen and its derivatives have a really important part to play. So part of this is about pure hydrogen and how that might be used in various applications. But another part of the approach is taking more renewable energy and using hydrogen as an intermediate to produce other low carbon forms of energy that can be used in transport, heat, industry, or sometimes actually using it for making power again. So I guess this is where the use of chemical energy and the use of electrical energy can start to become complementary. Use the two together.
All right, you already mentioned field of industry, steel production, things like that, and that's basically the case in Hamburg, that we need the green hydrogen for these fields. So what are the most urgent cases for hydrogen in Scotland? Do you already have some pilot projects or research projects going on in the field of hydrogen?
We've been very fortunate in that over the past 10 years, you know, we've been working very closely with some of the partners in Europe. So the Fuel Cell and Hydrogen Joint Undertaking is one of the European public-private initiatives. A number of programs it's been running, been on decarbonizing stationary energy, decarbonizing transport, but also starting to create hydrogen valleys. So locations where we can start to build the hydrogen production and the hydrogen demand and the way we actually store some of that energy as well. And the locations where we've actually had very, very, you know, long-running projects, Aberdeen, so the city of Aberdeen, which has been doing a lot of work on decarbonisation of transport, in particular the bus fleet in Aberdeen, and in Orkney, which is very different. You know, so Orkney, one of the islands to the north of Scotland, not an island, but a group of islands to the north of Scotland, has been doing a lot of work over the past 8 years to start to take some of their renewable energy and produce green hydrogen and to use that locally for transport and heat and actually producing electricity at times when the renewables aren't so available. So these projects, it's very much been about learning by doing, you know, starting to try new approaches. And you know, some of the approaches have worked well, some have been, you know, less successful. Learning by doing and actually sharing that experience with others. Often this is through the European programs within the Fuel Cells and Hydrogen Joint Undertaking. There's an activity about sharing the lessons learned between different hydrogen valleys. So the Orkney teams are working very closely with people from the Netherlands, in particular the area around Groningen in the North Netherlands, and more recently Mallorca. Some of the projects happening on Mallorca, very much about taking renewable energy. In that case, it's solar rather than wind, and turning that into hydrogen, which can be used for, you can transport it down the gas pipes that currently are used for natural gas, methane, and displacing that and starting to use hydrogen as a way of storing and moving energy around in Mallorca. So lots of work going on, Astrid, and it's still a lot more to do.
Of course. So maybe one more question. There will be a hydrogen transition summit during the COP26. It's actually a hybrid event, I think. There will be combined key policy, investment, technology and government stakeholders. So who will actually attend and what results do we need to expect from this summit? What do you think? And will you also be participating, of course?
So the Hydrogen Summit, which takes place on the 11th of November, is indeed a hybrid. So there will be people there in person, and I'm getting my ticket. And there will also be a lot of people taking part online. And you know, that's got a great program. It's got topics around transport and hydrogen, production of hydrogen at scale, speakers coming from around the world. Looking at the program, there's Chile, there's Australia, there's Portugal, all taking part, as well as many speakers from across Europe and from the UK. So that is going to be a really interesting event, so a whole day of activity. And it'll actually be opened by Michael Matheson, who is the Cabinet Secretary for Energy and Transport in Scotland. But as a bonus, Astrid, there's also on the 10th of November, Wednesday the 10th of November, a hydrogen conference with Scottish Enterprise. So I attended one of their events yesterday, and they have a series of these events running throughout COP26 on different themes. Yesterday was on low carbon transport with a focus on heavy vehicles, so trucks, buses. They've got one on low carbon heat and they've got one on hydrogen. So that's the one on the 10th of November. That again is online, and you can also find the registration online as well. So if you're interested, if your listeners are interested in what's going on, both from a Scottish perspective, but also from a wider perspective, there's everything there that you need between those two events on the 10th and the 11th of November.
All right. So I will tell my colleagues to participate in these events. Sounds very interesting. So I think there will be a lot of interesting events during these 2 weeks. Sounds great. So many thanks to you, Nigel, to Edinburgh. Have a great time at COP26 and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Astrid, thank you very much indeed.
Das war New Energy from Hamburg, der Podcast des Clusters Erneuerbare Energien Hamburg. Sie finden alle Folgen und mehr zu diesen und anderen Themen unter www.eehh.de. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören.